Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Today I am really excited to be sitting down and having a chat to Glenn Ryan, who is based in Queensland at the moment, so we're quite a while away. But we're going to have a chat today about pretty much how to set yourself up for success as a student and grad, pretty much sort of new clinician sort of rolling into the scene. So Glenn, thanks so much for jumping on, especially now that you're a new dad. So thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to jump on. How are you?
Yeah, sleep deprived. I think that's probably the best way to explain it. Having a newborn that's sort of 18 days old, was born on New Year's Eve. So it'll be parties from here on end. And she's definitely displaying that in the last 18 days. So we'll see how we go.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations. Now, for all our listeners who don't know you yet, we've obviously done a Q&A on our Instagram, so everyone can go and have a look at you there as well. But do you want to introduce yourself a little bit for everyone who hasn't, looked at that or looked at your social media, and give them an idea about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, too easy. So I guess Instagram handle is Your Paramedic Mentor. My name's Glenn Ryan. Essentially, I'm a paramedic out in Queensland, working with QAS as an ACP2. Been doing that since early 21, so coming on to 2 years now. Loving it. I guess in terms of study, I've done a little bit of study post-grad in critical care, and working through my diploma and then onto master's in the future as well. But that's pretty much me in a nutshell in terms of paramedic side of things. And then in my past life prior to paramedicine, I was a gym manager for probably 10 years in the aquatic industry as well. And then I was a chippy before that. So, yeah, done a bit of a variety of jobs before finding my calling at paramedicine. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Bit of a jack of all trades. So what made you want to start your sort of reach on social media? Because you've gained quite a lot of traction.
Yeah, I think it was just out of accountability for myself in the first instance. I wanted to, I guess, have a platform after sort of graduating, but I wanted to keep upskilling, keep my knowledge going. And I found at uni the best way that I could retain my knowledge was to actually teach others. So I figured if I could do that, utilizing the social media platform, then that's going to enhance sort of my clinical ability. And if someone else gets some benefit of it along the way, happy days.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, teaching others is the best way of learning. We know that. But I guess we're going to jump in today about obviously the things you're quite passionate about. There's quite a few concepts in there. So I guess we'll kick it off anyway. So you mentioned that you really are passionate about how to better prepare yourself for student life, and that features quite heavily on your page. So do you want to run through that a little bit? So, how to better prepare yourself for student life. So things that you'd sort of tell your student self now with the experience that you have.
Yeah, I think things I'd tell my former self, if I was a student now, just with everything that I guess I've gained over the last couple of years, I think no matter whether your first year, second year, third year, wherever you are in your development through the university stage, I think it all comes back to just doing the basics well. And you hear a lot of veteran paramedics or even ones that have just gotten jobs, they always say do the basics well. And sometimes it can be a bit of an eye roll sort of moment, I guess, when you're a student. But I think it is very, very pertinent, very true. Managing your time as well whilst you're at uni, I think it's quite important. So whether your head's in the books doing your university assessments, assignments, study, friends, family, fitness, I guess managing your time well to hit all those aspects of your life to a good degree so that you've got a good balance. It's just going to help you foster when you're at uni, actually trying to learn the content. With that, I guess surrounding yourself with like-minded people whilst you're at uni. So we all know like-minded people, when they get together, they're able to push themselves and have that growth. So I think that's quite important when you're at uni. Allow yourself to be a blank canvas, essentially. So if you've come in to study paramedicine and you know a little bit of first aid and stuff like that, and that's sort of what piqued your interest initially, try and forget that kind of stuff. Obviously, it's important, but try and be a blank canvas. Learn everything that you can. Don't come in as a know-it-all, and just be that blank canvas. Ask the questions that you're sort of unsure of. And really take in the information that the lecturers are giving you. They're obviously lecturers for a reason. They've been doing it for a while, so take on their information. And don't be shy to ask that silly question. I think as a student, you don't want to look incompetent, and especially as a paramedic, we don't want to look incompetent. It's just our nature. So asking those silly questions, because I think you're looking silly because you didn't ask that silly question, is probably worse than actually asking the question. So, and remember, you are that blank canvas. So if you do ask the question, it's expected. We want you to be able to build that canvas and paint what you need to. Another thing I think is that GPA side of things. I think during uni, we focus a lot on GPA, and I need to get a good GPA if I need to be looked at for a job. And yes, it's important. And it does, I guess, show that you've got an ability to recall academic information that's been taught, but it doesn't show your level of social intelligence. It doesn't show your level of body language, communication, empathy, compassion, your leadership, your trust, accountability, integrity, all those aspects that are sort of really important to be a very good clinician and a very good paramedic out in the field. So yes, GPA is important, and you want to do well, and you want to do well in your assessments and studies, but there's also that other element, that communication, that more human side that you need to sort of focus on as well. And then I guess finally, I'll just touch on just attending classes. Go to your classes, go to your lectures, your tutors, your skills, your workshops, your labs, all those kind of things at university, because that's where the hands-on, tactile type learning is going to sort of come to the forefront. And even the paramedic society events that they run, get involved with that. You only get out what you put in. That's the old saying. So, and I think it's very true.
Yeah, those are fantastic points. There's literally lots to unpack there, which I love. And I think you bring up some really great ones, obviously with mastering the basics, because, you know, you're not the first person to say that on this podcast. Like you said, there's been, you know, veterans that come on and say that. And as a first year, that can feel like, oh, really? Like, I've just learnt my ABCs. Like, literally, it's one of the most important things. And the basics do really, really get you there. And it literally comes down to, do you even know how to put on a sling? Like, I can't remember the last time I put on a sling, but like, you know, thinking about that now as a grad paramedic, I'm like, wow, I really actually probably need to go back and do that. But just small things like that, it's so important. And one of the things that gets asked a lot, which I feel like you'd be able to comment on this, which is, you know, people will reach out and say, hey, I'm about to study next year or in 3 months' time. What do you recommend for me to do now to prepare? And I mean, it's a hard one because, like you said, like you need to go into your degree as sort of this clean slate. And I remember starting the degree with absolutely no knowledge really about paramedicine or nursing itself. And I think, like you said, there's so many other elements to the degree or to paramedicine, like building your emotional intelligence and your social skills and leadership, everything like that, that like – for me, I when someone asked that, I'd say just like get really enthusiastic and enjoy it. So like read some books, like, you know, there's The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. There's A Life on the Line by Darren Hodge. There's so many different novel, like so many different books and exciting content to consume rather than getting worried about a textbook. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, absolutely. me being dyslexic, the last thing I want to do is have my head in a, you know, a medical book. But The thing is, if you work on those other aspects that you just mentioned, it does make the more clinical side a lot easier. So I think me being a mature age student, I think I'd liken it to the movie of Adam Sandler being in Billy Madison. So you're that older kid that's come in with all the younger ones. I know I was probably maybe the fourth oldest in my cohort when I went through. And it definitely did. I felt out of place to start off with. But then what I soon learned was, I guess there were a lot of strengths that I possessed in the forms of all those social intelligence and going through all that side of things. Whereas I needed to find my people at uni that I could maybe share my strengths with, where their strengths might have been on how to do APA formatting. How to do referencing, how to actually write academic writing to a good level. And I would use their strengths to better myself. So it's finding that relationship at uni where you've got common people with common goals, all helping each other to get the best out of themselves. So yeah, I guess my biggest advice would be to remember why you're studying the course. As I feel as mature age people coming into the university environment, there's obviously there's a change in direction that they've obviously taken. I'm not saying that students that have just come out of high school and going straight into uni, that it's not their purpose and it's not, paramedicine isn't their purpose. It's just that I guess a mature age person coming into a university environment, there's obviously a cognitive decision that they've made to go, yep, paramedicine, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm going to pursue, where they might have previously been in a different discipline, another career previously. So that's something that I think is really important for people to understand, especially as a mature age, to identify that and find your people within the uni.
Yeah, and your why is so important. I mean, you carry that throughout the degree and the tough times and everything like that, particularly when you're questioning if it is the right job for you. It's really important, like even now as a grad, like you will be faced with challenges, whether that be just, particular learning, or if you go to a troubling case, or you're dealing with other sort of external factors, the why really is so important. And it definitely makes sense that mature age, like students, obviously, when they've had that change in direction, cognitive sort of, they've made that cognitive decision. It can, like, you asked me when I was 17, 18, going into the degree, I probably would have had no idea, but that evolves over time. So I think, yeah, particularly people that are just coming into it, yeah, don't stress over trying to get all the medical knowledge in. You'll learn that, and just go with the flow with that. Be really keen, but also, probably the other things, like you said, just yeah, absolutely know your why. Why are you doing this degree? Because that'll prepare you better, I think, instead of trying to suck in all the knowledge.
Absolutely. You can definitely get bogged down with thinking of just all the information that's available to you, and you can feel definitely overwhelmed at times. So it's more about pulling yourself back, finding your people, and then just having a chat and getting the information that way.
Absolutely. Well, I think they're pretty fantastic ways to better prepare yourself for student life. And particularly before, when you mentioned as well, making sure that you do sort of have that time, so better preparing your time and sort of time management so that you can enjoy yourself outside of uni, because uni isn't everything. And that's the same thing when you get into this job. The job isn't, your whole identity. You do need to have other things outside of work. So I really like that, because it's not just about uni, it's about setting yourself up for when you are a grad or when you are in the job for 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll jump into the next concept, which you are passionate about, which is how to get the best out of your studies. We've gone from, better preparing yourself for student life, and now you're in it. How do we get the most out of our studies?
Yeah, so I guess it can be broken down into, I guess, three different elements. So I'll touch on the first one. So just participating in sims. So yeah, as a mentor earlier, don't feel like you're gonna look silly by getting something wrong. Like I do it on the daily. All the most successful people in their fields, they fail their way to success. That's the way I look at it. So if you're going to fail in a safe environment where you're going to get some learnings out of it to then propel you to be better for the next time. I think that's all this process is, really. Throughout university, you're going to get things wrong. You're going to get some things right. It's just how you utilize that information that you've received. So think of in these sims, think of the exposure and tactile learning that you'll gain from being involved in the process of the sim. So you're going to get that hands-on experience of actually getting that muscle memory as well of, doing that cannulation or doing that head-to-toe assessment where you're feeling down the limbs, feeling down the torso, feeling down the legs, rolling them over and checking their back. Doing all those tactile things will then become muscle memory for that time that you are in the field, and you do have to do that assessment. And then what it also does is when you're in that sim, you're going to have that fight, flight, or freeze sort of moment when you're in that sim where your heart's going 100 miles an hour, you've got all your peers looking at you, waiting for you to either stuff up or to do something really well. It's just a matter of how are you going to be in that moment. And I guess the more times that you immerse yourself in that moment, you're going to be more aware of what I call is your default position. So if you've got a default position that you know that in this moment you're more likely to freeze, then you can be better prepared for that. And then with that knowledge that you've gained, you can then go, okay, I'll plan for this, I'll plan for that, I'll do X, Y, Z in order for that not to occur again. And then what you're also doing is you're working on that hand-eye coordination for your skills, and then you're working on your pattern recognition as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, you could probably literally do a whole podcast on that. I mean, it's so important getting involved in your sims. And I think this idea of being nervous, it's challenging. I've been there. I didn't want to do a sim before in uni, and then when you do it, you got to ask yourself, what's the worst thing that can happen? You make a mistake, you might look a little bit silly, but at the end of the day, you've given it a go, you've learned something. And you'll get better at it next time, fingers crossed. But
Absolutely.
we've all made the same mistakes
But
twice sometimes.
absolutely. And then I think if we go to the next point, I guess the study approach and methods that you can use to be able to help with your, I guess, development through your uni. So, as I mentioned earlier, have a bit of a study plan in place. And understand what that looks like for you. So I know for me, when I first started, I was trying to, I'm mature age coming in, not knowing, haven't been in school for 10 years, thinking, oh yeah, I'll just get a notepad and pen, write down everything that the lecturer tells me. After about 6 months of that, I realized what I was writing down, I was never going back to. I was never reciting any of the information that I wrote down. And half of what I was writing down, I couldn't understand because my handwriting is shocking. So I guess find out what works for you. So it may involve different learning styles. So there's seven that I know of. There's probably more. But things like visual, verbal, audio, physical, logical, social, and solidarity. Solidarity, yeah. So they're the ones that sort of I know about, and they've found in studies that if you've got a combination of those mixed in with your study type, that you're going to have better results from that. So blend the different styles in, and you should be okay. For me, what I did was voice memos, so that was ticking off sort of my audio side of things. So I'd go into a lecture, I'd have my phone down, I'd record it, and then on my way home or on my way back to work, I'd then listen to that lecture back over. And what I found I would do is I would be preempting what the lecturer was going to say and just remember what sort of pathway they were on in explaining a certain sequence. And then because I'm trying to preempt it, I'm sort of already relearning that side of the information that was being given. The next thing I'll do is present to my uni friends because I just work better when I try and present. And try and teach someone else. So that's hitting both the verbal and the social side of things. I'd also do mind maps on a whiteboard because, once again, I'm a visual sort of learner. So having these mind maps where I can, I guess, attach certain elements together help me from a visual perspective. And then doing OSCEs and VIVAs. So that was then ticking off the physical side of things, where I'm learning that tactile stimulation of doing a skill, and that muscle memory sort of happening over time.
Yeah, absolutely. You bring up like the main concept there too is like you're constantly testing yourself. Like when you're preempting those lectures on your voice memos, it's almost like you're testing yourself what's next. Or when you're presenting, it's a way of, you know, active recall. You're trying to remember what you've learned, understand that, and then teach it to other people. And it's all these really scientifically based or evidence-based ways of studying, which you just manage for that work for you. It doesn't have to be what works for you works for me and vice versa. But I think that's a really good way of putting it as well. And I guess it comes back to as well, just having the vulnerability to give things a go, like give that sim a go, ask that dumb question or the thing that you think's a dumb question when it really probably isn't. and just, yeah, have a go. I think it's so important. And also the concept that your study can change. Like you said, when you started and you're handwriting everything and then you realize that wasn't working for you. I think that's really important because when I started and how I finished uni, the way I studied was completely different and it was way more efficient, and it's okay to change.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I can't agree anymore. You don't have to be stuck in that rut. If you find that something's not working, like it's just insanity. You keep going back to the same thing over and over. I'm pretty sure there's some famous saying that if you do the same thing over and over and not getting a different result, it's insanity or something. And then I guess touching on my last point will be tips, I guess, whilst on placement. So everyone gets excited when you're a student. Placement, it's the bee's knees of what you want to be doing. It's essentially why you sit through all the lectures and all the tutes, right? So I guess the tips for placement, I feel, should be specific to where you are in your development. This should take into account both the amount of exposure that you've had and the number of weeks on road. So just because you're in your final year of placement, but you might have had a lot of low acuity jobs, me as a mentor, I wouldn't be expecting you to then, you know, run that traumatic arrest or something along those lines. It would just be getting a gauge of your mentors and having a chat to them first up and just saying, hey, this is what I've done, this is where I've been, and this is what I feel comfortable at in my development. So, which is why you might have, when your mentor, you first see your mentor day one, usually the two things they'll ask you is, what placement number is this for you? And where have your placements been? So that's more the mentor getting a feel of, you know, how many weeks of on road have you done and what stations are they, so that I know how busy the stations are. So that gives me a gauge of what type of work that you might have seen. And then from there, I guess, embrace the low acuity is what I would say. We do go to quite a lot of low acuity. It can be very much when you first, start doing your placement, you think it's going to be like the TV shows, you're going to have all the compressions, you're going to have all the, you know, CPRs, the STEMIs, you're going to have car accidents here, there and everywhere. But sometimes it's not always the case. So embrace the low acuity. And so that you can build your systems, your patient history taken, whether you use OPIC-QRST, NIL-to-CAFIA sample, any of those assessments, these are the jobs that you are going to build your foundation, get the basics done really well. And then when you come time for that real tricky, complex medical, if you've got a really good foundation of your patient history taken, that's where that really comes to the forefront for those real tricky, complex medical jobs. So if you're unsure why something is done the way it is, just ask questions to your mentor. If you see them do something, just ask them at the end of the job, hey, why did you go here instead of this? Or why did you do what you did? Generally, you'll get a bit of an explanation so that you're able to then take that on and maybe utilize it at another time. And then if I just look at each year in isolation, so generally first years, what I'll sort of look for if I have a first year student on my track, is just a great attitude, really. You can't go wrong if you've got a good attitude. If you're engaging and you're not sitting on your phone, that's always a plus for me. Being proactive in taking vital signs. So if you want to, as a first year, run a job, like, I'm more than happy to let you have a crack. And if you're stumbling over, that's fine. Like, I'm not going to compromise patient safety. I'll just make sure that you're getting some learning out of it. So being proactive in taking those vital signs, having the ability to take direction from both your mentors, and then having a basic anatomy and physiology knowledge and ability to perform tasks as per their skills matrix. So they're, I guess, the building blocks that I try and make sure the first years have a good solid foundation on, because I think that will just promote growth for when they go through to their next one. That leads me on to the second year students. So once again, it's attitude. Want to make sure that they have a good head on their shoulders, just want to participate, want to be engaged in the learnings that they get, able to be the mentor's second officer, essentially. So I want them to be that second officer where they're going to be proactive and not reactive to taking vital signs, but they also need to show that they're able to prioritize which vital signs are more pertinent for that particular patient. So it's not just a matter of always putting on the BP cuff first, or always putting on the SpO2 probe first, or taking the temperature, or, you know, in whatever order that they're normally used to doing. I'd challenge them to the point of going, okay, we're going to this patient with chest pain. What assessments do we want to prioritize? And then seeing how they go managing that, and then educating them along the way. So once we've done that, I guess their knowledge of pharmacology should be there. Their knowledge on anatomy and physiology should have improved. And then they should have an understanding of how the pharmacology interacts with the anatomy and physiology. So that then when they're going into third year, they can then start looking at, okay, this is how I need to manage the patient, which I guess brings us into the third year student now. So I guess you can probably guess what the first one's going to be: attitude. So it's always about attitude first. Having that engagement, it could be your last placement. So you want to have that lasting impression, because I might be the mentor that you use as a reference, because it's your last placement. You should be starting to run jobs. This includes handovers at triage, resus handovers, you know, the high pressure jobs, increase in competence and differential diagnoses, and your management plans and extrication plans should be starting to get on point as well. You should have your advanced knowledge in anatomy and physiology, pharmacology. Your system reviews should be down pat. Understanding of your drug protocols and management plans, as well as looking at pertinent negatives to direct your management pathways as well. I think that's really important, especially when it comes time to doing your handovers when you get to the hospital, because that just shows that you've got a higher level of thinking with your management, and then the triage team can see that you've thought about other pertinent negatives that have taken you away from what your other provisional diagnoses were. And yeah, as I said, it's your final chance to make an impression, so you want to make the most of it.
For sure. I really like those. I think that's a fantastic overview, and definitely something that everyone should be able to take on board as well. I love how it's about attitude, and that's so important, because if you can have a curious attitude and one that's keen to learn, I mean, that's gonna get you to where you sort of need to be as well. On the topic now of sort of mentors and leaders, obviously we don't really get taught about that through uni, how to be a good mentor, how to be a good leader. How do we train to be a better mentor?
Yeah, how do we train for this, hey? I guess what's important to know about leadership and mentor is that you can't just get it from a Wheaties box. It's not just a certificate that you can get and then says, yep, I've got this certificate, I'm a leader now. It doesn't quite work that way. Yeah, it's not quite how it works. A leader, the way I look at it is, a leader is someone who's able to lead. So in order to lead, you need to lead something. You need followers, don't you? And that's the way I look at it. If they're following you, there must be some kind of influence that you have for them to then follow you. So in essence, a leader is someone who's got influence. And how do you gain that influence? So do you see where I'm, I guess, going with this? You ultimately need to lead by your actions, is what I'm saying. So if you're displaying the professionalism or skills that are required for the job, then someone's going to be more receptive to how you lead. They're going to feel that connection with what you do a little bit more. So I did a little post on this on my socials, actually. And it was about a TED Talk that a guy called Simon Sinek. I'm sure a lot of people who listen to TED Talks and stuff like that and have listened to his work know who he is. And he does a really good chat about performance and trust within high-performance teams. And that's the matrix that they use, is performance on one scale and then trust on the other scale. And obviously, this, I guess, experiment or was done with the Navy SEALs. So high-performance team that, you know, have a lot of importance in what they need to do. They need to be very proficient at what they do, and they need to be able to be very trustworthy in each other. So what they found was there were, I guess, a matrix where the most trustworthy person and the most professional and performance person is obviously who they want. That's their gold star person. But what they also found was the person that was high performance but low trust was a very toxic person within their team environment. So that is the person that they didn't want, despite them being very proficient at what they're able to do. That's not the kind of person that they want within their team. Whereas they'd prefer to have someone of lower performance but higher trust, because they can always upskill that person. So the way that I look at it is performance is pretty self-explanatory. Performance is obviously how well you do something. Whereas trust can sort of be split into four different elements. So elements such as empathy, integrity, consistency, and competency. So if you've got those elements there, that allows you to build that trust with either your mentor, and then from there, if you keep going, keep showing those attributes, you can then show your way through to that leadership position.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point as well. And I guess when you mentioned as well with influence, you know, you could be a leader, but you could also have like a really sort of bad influence on people and vice versa with the good.
Yeah.
So I think that's also really important as well. So, I mean, do you start out like, I think about it now, and I'm like, how do you improve yourself as a leader? And obviously it's about trust and accountability and all the things that, you know, you look at the values of, let's say, a particular company, and you used to like groan about it because you just have to, you know, memorize it and for your interviews and things, but it's actually the crux of what they want, which is good leaders. I mean, do you start doing that as a student? Do you start to try and do mentor sort of programs where some unis have like where you can, you know, mentor students in lower grades to try and help their learning? How do we actually get there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the best place to start, is at that uni environment. If you've done some study in your first year, you've got current up-to-date knowledge that you can pass on to the next cohort coming through. I think at the university that I went to, we never had that really. We had it from a, I guess, anatomy and physiology perspective, where there were workshops based on those elements, but there was nothing to teach the skills. There was nothing to sort of show the tips on placement. There was no other, I guess, the more tactile stuff. So getting a society together that can sort of make these workshop groups is critical. Not only are you providing better information for the cohorts coming through, and they're getting the learnings from a university lecturer's point of view, but they're also getting it from someone who's current and fresh, and getting their perspective on how to learn, how to interpret what's being said by the lecturers to a more simplified version. And in turn, the benefits that they're getting by teaching that is when it comes time for you to, you know, actually get a job in an ambulance service, if that's what you're wanting, then you're going to be thrust with students at some point. I know as soon as I got my stripes, I was day one, I had a grad as well as a university student first year. So from day one, I got my stripes, you're thrust in and you're teaching two people on your truck. That could be the reality. And the more exposure that you have of being able to teach, being able to pass on the information that you've learned, the more equipped you're going to be when it comes time when you're in an environment where that's going to be part of your norm, that's going to be part of your registration.
Yeah, for sure. That's really important too, because they also say that you generally will teach or mentor the way that you were mentored as well. So I guess then if you have bad mentors per se, ones that don't necessarily want to be a mentor or just unfortunately haven't been trained in how to be a mentor, we've all had them. How do we, one, deal with that experience as a student, because that can be quite challenging, two, how do we prevent, how do we increase our own experience in how we're mentored so that we don't become that mentor?
Yeah. I guess as we were saying before, mentors, we're not taught how to mentor within our environment. Like, it's not in any university course. It's not something that's taught. It's kind of something that's expected as part of our role. So sometimes it might seem that your mentor is, you know, quite cagey or very defensive on some of their things. And sometimes it can just be that mentor is a bit insecure of their own abilities and of their own ability to be able to mentor someone. And I think sometimes we see that from the outside as, oh, they're being very standoffish to me. Like, why is that? And we don't really read the room, whereas it's probably more to do with their own insecurities as well. So I'd look at that in isolation, but also look at yourself, look inward first. So could there have been something that you've done that might have caused that attitude shift between the pair, between the partnership? And if so, address it, own it. It's only going to add to your credibility, to your mentor's book. And then same on the flip side, it's not just a one-way street. It's transactional between both mentor and mentee. So it should also be, if the mentor is noticing something that their student or mentee has done that's caused an attitude shift, there should be that switch as well. And trying to have that open dialogue, keeping it professional, and just ask them straight up if there's anything that's concerning them. Always try and display compassion and empathy during these conversations. They're never easy to have. And it is always uncomfortable in the beginning. But I think once you find common ground and try not to let the conversation get emotive and approach it from a mentor's place of wanting them to learn, develop, so that the partnership can benefit the two of you and not just one-sided.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess too, it's also thinking that, like, what's going on. Like, I like the compassion as well, because it might be that they weren't meaning to be like that. They were just overwhelmed with what was happening or got other things going on. So, I mean, that's really important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it could be, you know, your mentor might have had something rough going on at home, and they're just not feeling it that day. And then it might just be one very minor thing that happens. You know, you might forget to put the BGL kid in the, you know, in the kid, or something little that happens that just sort of sets them over the edge, and they're not in a good mind frame for the rest of the shift. So just be wary of it, address it, show some empathy and compassion, and generally it'll be received quite well. And then you can sort of get on with your shift and not have to walk on eggshells for the rest of your shift.
Is there anything else you wanted to finalize on or share with everyone?
Yeah, no, it's just the social media platform of Insta. Your paramedic mentor is my handle. I'm probably more along the lines of replying to people's inboxes and doing Q&As as opposed to posting content all the time. I'm not very savvy when it comes to doing fancy looking posts. But I am quite good with replying back to people's private messages and getting the Q&As going. But yeah, that's, I guess, more my vibe. So hit me up if you want.
Awesome. All right. Well, I really appreciate you jumping on today. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. You can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or you can email us at thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com.